Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Michael Fosberg was in his early 30s when his mother and stepfather got divorced. He got angry and sad and then curious.
I never even bothered to ask her in all these years past what had happened to my biological father, who had disappeared from my sight and memory at the impressionably tender age of 2, a man whose image had been thoroughly buried in my mother's tech memory vaults. I went from losing dad number 2 to not knowing dad number 1 to the future, a remote possibility of acquiring a dad number 3 at the time. I was going through my own personal hell.
That's a clip from Incognito. It's a one-man play about Fosberg's discovery that after growing up in a middle-class white family, his biological father was black. The play raises questions of race and identity at a time when protests over the deaths of unarmed African Americans and Black Lives Matter are fueling what some are calling a new civil rights movement. Fosberg is performing Incognito this Sunday at East West University in Chicago to benefit Literature for All of Us. It's a program for under-resourced kids and adults in the Chicago area. And Michael Fosberg, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you, Virginia. It's good to speak with you.
Well, so your mother's white, Armenian American. Your stepfather is white. Did you grow up assuming your biological father was white as well?
Yeah, yes, I did.
No reason to question that.
No, there wasn't anything. Although, during my childhood, my high school years in particular, I was very attracted to African-American people, African-American culture. I jokingly referred to it in the play about owning all of James Brown's records on vinyl and being able to recite all Richard Pryor routines verbatim. But there wasn't anything in my immediate family to suggest that I was anything different than what they were. So.
Well, it was a girlfriend, I guess, who encouraged you to contact your biological father, who you called. So what did he tell you? How did he raise this?
Yeah, so we're going along in the phone call and sort of trying to wrap our heads around, our arms around the fact that, you know, I'm your son, you're my father. Wow, this is crazy. And then out of the blue, I mean, completely out of the blue, he says to me, you know, son, there's a couple of things you should know. I'm sure your mother's never told you. And of course, I'm like, well, aside from not telling me about you, you know, what else could there be? And the first thing he says is, well, you know, I want you to know that no matter what you thought happened or what you were told or what you assumed, I've always loved you and thought of you a lot, which was, you know, I was just so elated to hear that from my father for the first time telling me he loved me. And then he says, there's one other thing I'm sure your mother's never told you. And there was this pause and he says, I'm African American.
Wow.
And that was sort of like, that was, you know, that was the, like, wait, did I just hear that correctly? What just went by? And I remember I was living in a tiny rent-controlled apartment in the Santa Monica area in Southern California, and I remember it was probably about the size of a walk-in closet, the whole apartment. And there was a mirror next to me, and I kind of looked in the mirror to see, like, well, did you just change or what happened? And, you know, that was the initial response from that information.
Oh, I cannot imagine. I mean, here you are in your mid-30s, so you're
right.
Kind of assuming that at that point in your life, you've probably gone through that kind of, who am I in the world? You know, what is my identity?
Right. Well, I think as a result of all of this and as a result of me traveling around the country for 12 years now, which is kind of crazy, telling this story on average 60 to 80 times a year in different kinds of venues, whether it's for high schools or colleges or for corporations and government agencies or for organizations like Literature for All of Us, what I've discovered in the dialogues is that our identities are fluid, that they're constantly changing. For instance, I'll give you a perfect example of not just that major change in my life, but in the last 2.5 years ago, I got married for the first time in my life. And so now I see myself as a husband.
Yeah, well, congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. But that wasn't a part of my identity for the first 50-some-odd years of my life. So I guess I'm saying is that we don't always acknowledge how our identities are fluid and how they're constantly changing.
On some level, it brings out this sense of how arbitrary it is, you know, how the idea of race is more arbitrary than a parent, you know, something you're assigned to or lived. How did this make you think about your place in the world? I mean, a kind of inherent privilege in being white that you probably never had to look at before, did you?
Right. So what am I now, and how do I come up with this identity? I'm biracial, am I black, am I white? So there's a lot of controversy around this, because, and I think this is because we've been steeped in such a racist history in this country, and because there's just so many ideas, and so many people are so opinionated when it comes to you're black, you're white. For the most part, we've all been given two choices. You're either white or you're black. You're either conservative or a liberal. You're a Democrat or a Republican, good or evil, gay or straight. But there's all kinds of things that exist between those choices, and we don't always acknowledge the breadth of all of those choices or all of those identities, as it were, be, you know. And I sometimes struggle with the idea of what is my biracial identity. Sometimes I suppose I gravitate more towards my black family. Sometimes I gravitate more towards my white family. Sometimes it's really stark when I see the kinds of privileges and benefits that I have having light skin as opposed to some of my darker skin family members or friends. So it really brings up a lot of issues for me and for audiences when I have this dialogue with them following the show.
Yeah, I understand that's a big part of it, the conversations after the performances.
Right.
Have you noticed them changing in the last year as Black Lives Matter, you know, the protests movement that started a year ago this summer, have triggered?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been doing this for a long time and really my goal is to get people to engage in a conversation about how we see ourselves and how we look at other people and what is race and stereotypes and all these different things. And I've been noticing, you know, every year my bookings have increased as more and more people want to have this conversation. And it's a really unique way to go about having that conversation. Last year, my bookings were down considerably. And I was really shocked because this was, you know, from Trayvon Martin thing
right.
into Eric Gardner and all this stuff. And I struggled to get people to book the show. And people told us, you know, we're really not ready to have this conversation. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. This is 2014, you're not ready to have this conversation. When do you think you will be ready to have this conversation? And then Black Lives Matter took flight and more things happened with Tamir Rice in Cleveland and Michael Brown in Ferguson and, you know, all up through the things that went on in Charles. And now this year, my bookings have kind of gone through the roof.
Interesting. I'm wondering also in those conversations, I have a mixed race friend who says, you know, I often get called to account for not sort of being black enough, you know, that I didn't
yes.
have that experience. Do you get that from people
oh,
who
yeah.
don't think you experience life as a black man?
Sure, sure. I have no defense for that. I do not have that experience to this day. I am light skinned. Most people see me as white. But that brings out the whole point that there isn't any one black experience. There are many different black experiences, just like there are many different white experiences, many different gay experiences, many different adoptee experiences. And so we need to take that into account when we're having this conversation.
So imagine living your life in a middle-class white neighborhood and finding out in your mid-30s that your biological father is black. That's what happened to my guest, Michael Fosberg, and he's created a one-man play and book called Incognito about the experience. Well, I know that in the play, you know, there's this kind of anger at your mother for not having told you about this, but you kind of work through it. And one of the reviews I read praised the play for being performed without anger, quote unquote.
Yeah.
But now, you know, we're looking at the protests and the movement that erupted after the deaths of, as you mentioned, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland.
Right.
They were fueled by outrage at injustice. So what role should anger play in this conversation about race in America?
Well, that's a very good question. I am trying not to approach the conversation from a place of anger, and I try to encourage others to do the same, although I completely understand where that comes from and why that exists. What I think happens for a lot of people, especially white people, is that when there's a lot of anger in the room, especially from people of color, they tend to shut down. White people, we tend to shut down when we're in that place. And when we're asked to have a conversation about race, we tend to approach it from a place of caution. Some of us are more cautious than others, but we're cautious because we don't want to say anything that might sound racist or inappropriate or whatever it might be. And we don't want to be jumped on by people of color telling us, you know, how we should think and what we should feel and how racist we are, whatever it might be. And this is part of the problem, is that we're polarized and we don't end up having that conversation. And so what I'm trying to say is it's going to be awkward. It's going to be uncomfortable, but we need to have the conversation, and let's have it from a place of respect.
Well, Michael, this performance is a collaboration with Literature for All of Us and a benefit. It sounds like a really interesting program operating on this kind of book club model with
right.
under-resourced populations. Why are you working with them?
I actually went to a benefit for their organization that was done by a theater group, and there were a couple of different organizations that they had chosen to. All the proceeds from that evening's performance went to a couple of different organizations, and Literature for All of Us was one of those organizations. And when I discovered what they were doing and their mission, I thought, well, how interesting. I wrote this book about my discovery of my African-American, my black roots. And this is what they're trying to do, is to really try to help under-resourced students, teenagers, adults learn more reading skills and be able to write their stories. And I thought, wow, well, that's what I've done, is I've written my story, and it has to do with race and identity, and that's really what they're trying to promote in these communities. And I thought, what a great thing they're doing, and what a great match for what I'm doing and what they're doing. And I thought, I got to give back. So yes, I make a living doing this, trying to go around the country and get people to engage in conversation, but I got to give back somehow, and I felt like this is a great organization to give to.
Michael, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Virginia. It's a pleasure.
Michael Fosberg, he's an actor, an author, and an activist. His book, Incognito, An American Odyssey of Race and Self-Discovery, and one-man play of the same name, tell the story of a man raised in a white middle-class family, finding out in his mid-30s that his father is African-American. He's performed the show for more than a decade, and it'll be at East West University in Chicago on Sunday. For reviews and clips for the show and more on Michael and Literature for All of Us, you can visit wordofmouthradio.org.